Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the call to discuss Red Cross recommendations held on Wednesday, the 12th of September, 2018, at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. At this time, I am not showing any participants who are only on the audio bridge. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Thomas Rickert. Please begin.
Thanks very much, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Thomas Rickert. I'm the chair of the reconvened CDP Working Group, and I'm very glad that we arranged for this call to take place, and I'd like to thank staff for doing some groundwork for this. And as you know, we have scheduled this call to discuss our report and particularly to discuss the destiny, if you wish, of the recommendations that the reconvened PDP Working Group came up with. Deliberations at the council level have been paused because of a deferral that you've asked for, and I think it would be good of us to do a couple of things, which you see in the agenda. So what we plan to do today is give you a little bit of background on the overall effort and why we are where we are. Then if you want to, I'm not sure how many of you have taken a deep dive into the final report and the recommendations, we can give you an overview of that. And as a third item, we should discuss what we can do in order to reconcile potential differences there are. So I think that everyone is familiar with each other on this call, so I would suggest that we take the roll call from the Adobe room. If you have updates to statements of interest, you know, although this is an informal call, please do let us know for transparency purposes or type that in the chat. But other than that, I suggest that we dive into substance immediately. So you will remember that we've been asked by the GMSO Council to reconvene as a working group. There has been an initial effort that came up with the final report in 2013 on the protection of certain strings for IGOs, in particular the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. During those deliberations, some protections have been granted in terms of reservations for a couple of exact match names, and there also have been granted protections with the notification service according to the trademark clearinghouse. Towards the very end of the working group deliberations, there has been formal GAC advice that there should be stronger protections for additional identifiers for the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement and national societies. And there has been, we were landed with the situation where the GNSO recommendations were clashing with GAC advice. And then everything was basically on hold for a couple of years. And lately, the GNSO Council has asked us to revisit our recommendations and to look at very narrowly scoped questions, which we did. And we came up with recommendations, as you see in our report, on which you have commented. Now, I think it's important to note that your group has participated actively in the original PDP working group's work. Your group did not like the outcome, i.e. granting special protections way back when. So there has been a minority statement in the 2013 report with which you, and there have been minority statements by others, have expressed the discomfort with granting special protections to special groups. So this minority statement can still be found in the original 2013 report. Nonetheless, when the report came to the GMSO Council level, it was unanimously accepted. And I think that's an important information, at least I hope you find it relevant for this discussion, because a clear distinction was made between the working group deliberations, the outcome of the working group deliberations, and what's been discussed and ultimately voted upon at the GMSO Council level. And that has to do a lot with the role of the GMSO Council, and at least the way I and a couple of other folks in the community understand it. So while there was quite some opposition to the recommendations in 2013, and these are on the record, the councillors representing, and I think it was Ed Morris at the time, and I remember sitting in this big, big room and waiting anxiously for the GMSO vote to be taken, and then I was quite pleased that there was unanimity by all councillors to vote our report up. And Ed Morris said, I think those were the words he was choosing, I hate the recommendation, but the PDP working group was following the process as it should, and therefore we vote yes at the council level on the on what the council's role should be, i.e. not to rehash discussions at the working group level, but to check as a steward of the policy development process whether due process was followed. And maybe I hope that you agree that this distinction is also relevant for what we see today. So I have seen in your public comment that you raised legal concerns. We can go through all of them. Yet I think it's important to remember that it is very well possible to be in total disagreement with the outcome, with the substantive outcome of the report, and yet give its blessing at the council level. So I just wanted to share this with you by means of introduction, and I see that Fazanet's hand is raised. So Fazanet, please go ahead.
Thank you, Thomas, for that background. It is my side. Okay. I can hear myself. All right. So basically, I understand from your comments that GMSO Council should just look at whether the PDP has followed the process and it has actually just the process-wise is fine and doesn't really comment on what is in the recommendation. The problem that I raised and I see in this in these recommendations of this group is, first of all, when they respond to our public comments, the answers are not convincing, they are not well elaborated, and they are defensive. Of course, they don't have enough time, and they're at the end of it, and all that is, I understand those reasons. However, when we do public comment is not for just, decoration or just, give us a sense of a feeling of democracy, but it's also to see answers and also to if the answers in the public comments were convincing, were well elaborated, were something that that we can consider, and then we say, okay, so we have our reservations, but they have responded, we are fine with it. And I see that Mary says that. It's important that the council ensure that the WG follow the relevant process. That's not necessarily the only consideration. Great. So it's not only about process then. I don't know all the rules, but anyway, this is like one of our concerns. Our public comment responses were defensive. So for example, when we say it's not on the legal basis, they say, oh no, but it is on it's based on legal basis. So for example,
for example, they also say that you respect a principle of protecting the freedom of expression have given serious consideration in the context of the finite and very limited nature. But then they say that there's another point that they don't say how they considered it. And also, we have a problem with the report itself, which has a couple of recommendations that are very concerning. Now, you might just tell me that I am wrong and my interpretation is wrong, then I suggest that the wording be clear because, well, I have looked at the report. I read the report several times, and I kind of understand ICANN by now and the issues. So if it's not clear to me, then it's open to interpretation, then that would be fine. The other, the recommendations that set a bad precedent, there are two aspects. There is allowing addition to a finished list to happen without going through another PVP. How is that a finished list if you can add to it without going through to a PVP? And the other thing is you reference that there are legal bases for, more or less, that there are legal bases for such protection. And we disagree. I know that you have referenced several provisions, I think one about emblem that came into effect in 2017, but I am at loss to make a connection between emblem and word. The other thing is that, and I have to add, there's a clarifying thing. The document is very, the recommendation is very careful not to say that I based, not to directly say that I based it on an appropriate legal basis, but it says, this section summarizes the deliberations of this WG on what can constitute an appropriate legal basis upon which to grant permanent protection in the form of reservation for the names of the Red Cross, blah, blah, blah. The text herein does not purport to constitute legal analysis of the applicable international and national laws and should not be referenced in that regard. Great, but no, we don't think there is legal basis, and we think this is dangerous. Even if you say that I do not reference this document, it's such bad precedent. And you have not, it doesn't look like that there have been a lot of like legal analysis of whether such protections are legal. And these are all ex ante protections that we cannot predict what sort of consequences they are going to have for us. So sorry, I've been talking too much, but these are like the gist of what our concerns are, and we have we actually said a couple of other concerns in our public comments, and so this was the reason why in the public in our policy meeting we decided the council also decided that the NCHC representative decided to defer on this issue. To get more explanation. Now, I will go down, maybe we got it wrong. And then also, one other point that I wanted to make, which is, it is not really a serious issue, but when we say we did not actively participate in this group, and then that we were like criticized, and there were some suggestions that those that do not participate, they should not be able to defer. And I find that that suggestion very dangerous. We don't have time to, we are a voluntary group. We don't have time to participate in every issue that GATT wants to just reopen, and we reserve the right to write public comments and on the recommendations, and also abstain if we have to. So now this meeting, we want to just decide based on the information you give us what to do, and whether to abstain, or if we are totally wrong and these concerns that I just raised are not real concerns, or if we got something totally wrong, then we are all ears, and we are willing to change our minds. So that was it.
Let me try to respond to a couple of points. One, when I spoke about the role of the GNSO Council, I said that this is my understanding and the understanding of many others. So Mary is certainly right that other considerations can also play a role in the decision making at the GNSO Council level. So, you know, my statement was not absolute, and I hope it hasn't appeared to be absolute. Then I heard that you were dissatisfied with our response to your public comment, and that I think you said you don't just file public comments for decoration, but that you actually expect to get substantive answers. I've asked staff through the back channel to bring up the public comment review tool, and I think that our group has applied the same diligence in responding to your public comment as it did with other public comments, and also compared to other working groups that I've been involved in. I think that we have not disregarded your input, but we did have some difficulty with the fact that the comments were made without working group without your group's representation during the entire discussion, and I fully appreciate that it's difficult, number one, for each and every group to follow each and every initiative in the ICANN ecosystem. So I'm not criticizing that at all, but you will appreciate that it's difficult for our group as well to summarize the discussions that we had in a total of 9 calls in a response to very broad brush and general criticism to our overall approach. So I hope that we can at least resolve that by saying, you know, if I give you assurance that we looked at your comment and we tried to, we discussed it quite lengthy during one of the last calls, so there was no disrespect in our response. Yes, I understand that you're open-minded with respect to the outcome, and what I suggest doing after we heard Rafiq, who has also raised his hand, that we actually go into some of the niceties of this. We had very long discussions about the legal basis, and certainly none of the treaties speaks to domain names specifically, right? So we went great lengths in order to learn about what protections there are and whether the language and the spirit of the treaties and national laws gives us sufficient comfort in order to grant those protections. And the group came to the conclusion that there were sufficient protections. And I think we should ask the expert on this, which is Mary, to give us a little bit of insight into that. And after we heard Mary, maybe you can clarify more what your issues with the legal basis were. And if Mary doesn't respond to your request in her first intervention, then let's try to dive deeper in order to give you all the information that you need in order to make an informed decision. So let's move to Rafik, and then let's go to Mary.
Hey, thanks, Thomas. Just, I'm not going to make comments about the substance and the issues that were raised by Farzana, but just maybe to make sure that I think we acknowledge the challenge for the group as we used a kind of a process for first time to amend a recommendation and then to reconvene working group, and so having less participation since it, the first time you finished at 2013, that we acknowledge that, and it impacted us. And just maybe to also we can to remember that the participation at the end in the working group for anybody is in with his or her own capacity. So this is the kind of limited participation for that working group, and you couldn't have all maybe position or perspective. So that's why for a group like NCAG, we try to use the public comment as a way to cover any to fill any gap, which was the case here. And so I can understand the frustration from Farzana, because I think it's not just for this working group, but maybe it's something even at the council we need to think is when we have a whole PDP that we understand that most of the work will be done in the working group, we still have the public comments as an important milestone. And so we still here facing an issue how the comments are reviewed and what are the action taken. So I can understand from the working group worked on an answer. Maybe it's not that satisfactory. We can argue on that. But just maybe this is an issue is how we can do better. It's not just for this working group, but I think this is maybe the problem we have to think in general. Just wanted here to clarify. I mean, we understand the challenge. And so what we are trying to do in this call is just to see, to understand better your perspective, and also to give our perspective. Then, since we didn't have that chance maybe to respond in time when the working group members reviewed our comments and if there was some question, so we could at that time maybe find a solution how to respond or clarify, but for now we are in a situation that the recommendations are at the level of the General Council, and so we are trying to see how we can make an educated decision on this recommendation based on our comment, but also understanding the perspective of the working group. So.
Okay, thank you so much, Rafik. And again, I appreciate that you're using the public comment as an opportunity to chime in. I know that all of you are working very hard, some of you for many, many years in the ICANN community, and you know, you all have excellent track records. So we know we can't be everywhere, and we only have that many hours in a day, right? So let's try to get to the core questions, actually. And I would suggest that we skip agenda item number 2. It looks like you all are very familiar with the report, so a review of the recommendations doesn't seem to be required. So sorry for Barry, who was actually prepared for that. You will find another opportunity to speak to those probably. So let's try to dig a little bit deeper on the legal questions, on the points that Amr mentioned in the chat, but also on the concerns raised by your group with respect to the rights to free expression, et cetera, and to what extent this working group has actually covered that. So, Mary, over to you.
Thank you, Thomas, and hi, everybody. This is Mary. And I think someone may have a speaker open, but seems to be gone. Thank you. So I don't think we need to, for the sake of time, repeat what's either in the final report or perhaps mainly for purposes of discussion of the legal basis, what was in the two attachments that Barry pasted links to, I believe, in the chat, just up thread. And that is because significant discussion occurred and substantial work took place on this particular question. What exactly is the legal basis throughout the life of efforts preceding the reconvening of this group? And it was a particular focus of the facilitated discussion back in, I think it must have been March 2017, that led first to the board resolution requesting that the council look at possibly reconvening this group. And then also, again, most particularly for GNSO purposes, in the council resolution that reconvened the group and gave it a very, very specific direction and a very designated scope, if I can use that word, and we'll come to the word designations in a bit. So there are other considerations that if I have time I'll come to, but on the particular question of legal basis, there's a couple of points I think to note. One is that we are talking about international humanitarian law, fundamentally, and that is found in the various Geneva Conventions, their protocols, and what may be helpful is the official commentary to those conventions and protocols. A lot of this has been summarized in, I think, one of the position papers that was used in the facilitated discussion in 2017, and I think that is referenced by this reconvened group in the final report. And summarized as part of the report. In short, there are several articles in the Geneva Conventions that speak to, first of all, the protection of the emblem and why, and also to the related symbols and emblems of the Red Cross, like the Red Crystal, Red Lion, and Sun, etc. But more importantly, in relation to your questions, the designations. And Barry has pointed out in the chat that this was something noted and discussed by this reconvened working group as well. So while there are a few relevant articles, I think the most relevant one for the current purpose is what I pasted in the chat, which is Article 53, which talks about protection for the emblems and their designations, as well as the prohibition on their use by individuals, societies, firms, and so forth, of both the emblem as well as the designation. And if you notice, any sign or designation constituting an imitation thereof, whatever the object of such use. In addition, once you look beyond international humanitarian law, you find that these protections in the Geneva Conventions have been implemented in a number of countries through national designations, legislation. And in a number of these countries, the national legislation actually goes further than what's in the convention. So in short, Thomas and everybody, this discussion was quite extensive at various points in the life cycle of this particular topic. It was also a part of the discussion of this reconvened group. And maybe I can stop here because I noticed that there's some comments in the chat and see if there's any questions or comments.
Yeah. Mary, sorry, I just got the mic. I don't know who's moderating this meeting, so sorry for disrupting. Okay, thank you. Yes, we did read that those parts, and still I have So you looked at the law, and you still say in the recommendations that the text does not constitute legal analysis of the applicable international national law. It should not be relied. And has only relied on Red Cross justification that there are legal bases. So, okay, so the party that wants to protect its own name provides legal justification, which is, okay, so this is fine. But then the problem that I think this is going to raise for us is that we are going to see more and more and more of these claims, and I am dreading the day that they look at these recommendations and say, look, there's like, you've done the legal analysis, there are legal basis, here are some other legal basis to take others. So I suggest that, I don't know if there can be some kind of like a change in the text anymore, but I don't think so. I think it's been finalized, but I don't agree that this group should actually have it in its recommendation that this is based on legal basis, because it seems like that it is arguing that, and it's going to set that precedent. But that's what it, let's move on to the other issue. I think Amr's hand is up. So, Amr, I'd let you speak.
Thanks, Farzi, and thanks, Thomas, Heather, Mary, and Barry for entertaining us with this call, or allowing us to hold it with you all. I had a question. I was wondering if, regarding what the working group did and did not deliberate upon, and I was wondering, and to be completely honest, I'm only reading Article 53 for the first time now, so please consider this a first impression of my reading of this article. So I'm just wondering whether the reconvened working group deliberated upon the extent to which Article 53 is applicable. And again, this is because of the issue of designation. So we've moved past emblems. We understand that Article 53 expands the protection against misuse to not just the emblem, but designations. But did the reconvened working group deliberate on the extent to which these protections are afforded and whether the recommendations in the reconvened working group's final reports are proportionate to that protection, or do they go beyond it? And I ask this because, again, my first reading of this article, it seems that, the use or misuse by private individual societies or firms of the arms of the Swiss Confederation, and so I'm reading here, of the marks constituting imitation thereof, whether as trademarks or commercial marks or as part of such marks or for a purpose contrary to commercial honesty or in circumstances capable of wounding Swiss national sentiment, etc. So it seems that there are certain scenarios where, the use of the emblem or designation here might be considered misuse and are therefore afforded protections. But the reconvened working group's recommendation makes this protection absolute against any form of use whatsoever and permanent. So I was just wondering to what extent the reconvened working group considered these issues and what their conclusions might have been. Thank you.
Sorry, I had to get myself off mute. Mary, why don't you offer a response to those points?
Thank you, Thomas. I'll try. And thank you, Farzaneh and Amma, for the questions. It's really good that we're having this discussion, try to clarify things. And let me start with Farzaneh's comment. And Farzaneh, I note that point in the report that you refer to about the summary that the working group has in its text not being taken as legal analysis. And the reason why that is there is simply because that is not an expert legal opinion, and the working group simply, cannot be in a position where in future, someone points to their report and says, that's the legal opinion, and that's where the proof is. Instead, as Barry and I have said, you have to go back to the source documents, and there are several. And Article 53 being one of the various articles that in combination give that legal protection, then explains further in a number of protocols, commentaries, and so forth. And it's also protected, in some cases extended, as I said, in national law. But it's also important, and hopefully this addresses the additional questions that Anna and others have mentioned, It's also important to note that while that was a very fundamental discussion, because, you know, in line with the NCSG's position and concerns, right, you can't, you know, take something out of the system without there being a legal basis for it. But in addition, it was recognized, and I think throughout the life cycle of the various GNSO efforts, that the Red Cross is in a very particular position vis-a-vis other international organizations, vis-a-vis other NGOs. And if you recall, this was actually recognized way back in the original PDP, including by the NCSG representative. So the question was, if they are that special, what makes them special? And by dint of that special nature, what are the protections that ought to be given to it, and not more, but appropriate? And so in addition to legal basis, one very important point is the public interest concern that was noted in particular by the GAC. And I think it's important that the group also consider that this was deliberated on by this reconvened working group. I noticed that Heather in the chat has made a couple of comments, and we can provide the links to the recording and transcripts, but I think the point that I'd like to make here is that while the fundamental legal basis is important, and we're addressing it here today because that was a specific question that was raised by the councillors, it's important to note that there are other equally important considerations based on public interest and public policy. And in addition to that, but as part of the overall discussion, the limitation was quite circumscribed. So, for example, when you're talking about the national societies, the working group considered quite clearly the fact that it is only a officially recognized national society that would get on the list. And we can talk a little bit later on about how the list is changed, and that was also heavily circumscribed too. But in a, but basically for current purposes, the process, the standards, the difficulty by which a group becomes a national society was discussed within the group, the public interest concern and the mission of the Red Cross that places it along with the legal basis in a very, very particular position, very different from any other IGO, was also taken into account by the group. So I hope that this at least gives some sense of the group's deliberations and the various reasons and why, at the end of it, the working group felt that it did fulfill the council's instructions. It did come up with a very limited, finite list that applies only to the Red Cross for this purpose. Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks, Mary. We have Fazani in the queue again. Fazani, please.
I'm sorry. I don't want to. Dominate this call. So, but then I also want to raise the other point. Okay. So we understand that you've discussed the legal basis. My concern is still that the language in the recommendations about the. That this decision was based on a legal reason, and I'm worried about it. My concern is not alleviated, despite the language being quite precise that it's not a legal analysis. So I don't know how they didn't do a legal analysis as such, but then also said that that's one of the legal basis, one of the reasons. All right. Let's move on because we only, I think, have 20 minutes. Not to take your time more than this. The other very, very important aspect of these recommendations, and tell me if I'm wrong here. I can see that, if I just pull it up from here, so you have a translation and transliteration of these groups that are not that are included, right? So you have transliteration as well. So these are not 191 names, if I'm not mistaken. There are more than that. So that's another point that if we could clarify, then I think the report shouldn't say, if it's more than that, shouldn't say 191 names. It should say one, but also the official languages, applicable official languages too, which will make it how many? Like 380 or something. And then the most important thing that I think is very concerning here is not is allowing such measures of addition to the list be taken place without having to go through a PDP. So if I got that bit wrong, then tell me. But I don't think you should put it, I don't think any criteria for addition should be here, because sincerely, that would not be a finished list, especially when you say you shouldn't go to a PDP to add to the list. So if there is like something that you can add or correct me, then that would be great. Thanks.
Thanks, Fazani. Let me try to respond to that. If you talk about additions or potential additions to the list, we have 191 national societies, and I think that theoretically there can only be one or two more. Mary or Barry might know the exact figure, but we have explicitly asked how many of these organizations can be created, because we were afraid that that this might open the floodgates. And in fact, you know, it's less than a handful of countries that can still set up such an organization. So we're looking potentially at a very limited number of additional organizations, I think one or two actually. And we intentionally crafted a process that would allow for the addition of those without the need of doing an additional policy development process, because the criteria would be the same. There would be the same requirements in terms of syntax and variants as you see in the Adobe room now. So I think we've done what we could in order to prevent mission creep into more organizations. So, finally, I read that these 191, as it should read, organizations and many more names, I believe. Yes, we have more names, but those names are variations of the organization's names. And we had quite a discussion as to what that should be, because we didn't want to render those protections entirely moot by just having exact matches, but to have the names that actually would be used in the respective countries. And also, since, you know, as you know, although these are not trademark protections, the general principle of trademark protection is protection against identical or confusingly similar names. So this is basically what we covered in this exercise, and also we try to cover what is typically done when the names are put into the reserved names list, i.e. what the technical requirements would be, how to deal with dashes, how to deal with blank spaces and stuff like that. So that's why the number is relatively high in total, but in fact it's just variations of a limited number of names. I would suggest that, you know, Fazane and others, and I think Fazane, you've been particularly outspoken on the lack of legal basis that you see. So we try to outline what our group did. So if you could be probably more specific in what you are missing or what explanations we could likely offer, then that would be appreciated. So I saw Mary's hand was raised. Now, Farzana, you've raised your hand again. Since it would be Mary anyway that I would go to respond, let's hear Farzana first with additional questions and then go to Mary to offer a response. Farzana?
Thank you, Thomas. Just to save time, I really I think we should also focus on not having to go through another PDP to add it to the list and make any additions. I think that that is very important to be discussed as well. Go ahead, Nurse.
Thanks, Farzaneh, and I do think it's important to come back to your questions and concerns, and particularly about any concerns regarding the working group and how it came up with this very limited defined list of variants. But I put my hand up because I thought it might be faster, Thomas and everyone, to add to some of the conversation that Arma and I have been having in the chat, especially for purposes of the recording and the transcript. And he had asked a question about the designations, meaning the names, Red Cross, Red Crystal, et cetera, and what I wanted to note is that this was actually a question back in the original PDP working group in 2012-2013, and Thomas, maybe you don't want to remember all those discussions back then, but if you all recall, in that original working group, it did lead to a consensus and ultimately a consensus policy that has now been implemented where the words, the names, Red Cross, Red Crystal, Red Lion, and Sun, were reserved or withheld from delegation. So in similar vein, you know, that was the understanding that carried over into this reconvened group. The Geneva Conventions do make it clear, and I cannot remember the exact article, I apologize, that this the prohibition on the use and the application of the protection also extends to the national societies. And that is one reason why, when talking about the national societies, this reconvened group did take into consideration the fact that it's extremely hard and there is a full formal process to be recognized as a national society. So, you know, in short, while the Geneva Conventions, it's not just when they were written, but the breadth of their coverage, you know, including the use of the emblems and designations in times of armed conflict, really don't get as specific as talking about domain names or, you know, websites or use on the internet. The commentaries that I pointed to do note that they apply to usage online, and as a result of the discussions that were first held within the original PDP working group, hopefully, Arma, that history and this explanation can help this group understand why, for present purposes, this reconvened working group was able to reach the conclusions that it did. And so I'll stop talking now and go back to Farzaneh. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time for all the explanation. And go ahead, Thomas.
No, I was just trying to give you the floor for additional questions. And you asked a question in the chat, under protection of words. So tell me, can I register Iranian Red Cross .watch? And the answer is, if this Iranian Red Cross string is on the list, it will be blocked. And if you want to hold organizations accountable, then you would need to do that with another name, actually. So I think there is quite a wide range of court decisions, at least in Germany, where identical designations can't be used for, you know, criticizing organizations. So I think, in a nutshell, what we try to do is give protections to the organizations, keep those as limited as possible, cover a couple of identical or confusingly similar names. So we have 9 minutes left, so I think we can perfectly exhaust that hour. So if you have more questions that we can try to answer, please let us know.
Yeah, so I want to go back to, I'm sorry, I'm being annoying here and pedantic, but I want to go back to, and I know you wanted to have a laugh, so, but I'm sorry, I'm not very humorous today, but so let's go back to this PDP thing that they don't have to reconvene a PDP if they want to add to this list. Barry says that the names are predicted somewhere else in the INGO, so it can be added to the list. So my concern is, if you do this, this is going to set precedent, of course, but then the whole international organization groups, they are trying to do this anyway to get a bunch of names protected, no one can register them, and then they just go and forget about them. But then if you allow this to happen, if you allow the addition to happen without going through PDP, and I'm not talking about correction or deletion, I'm talking about, then this is not a finished list. So I want to hear an argument that this is a finite list despite the fact that additions are allowed.
Let me see. Mary, is this something that you can easily answer, or Barry? Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Thomas, and I'll try, but Barry might need to supplement because I think that the essence of the answer, Farzaneh, if I understood your question correctly, does actually lie in the wording of the recommendation. And you see that it's here on the screen, and I'm just going to scroll back a little bit, right, that first of all, there's a couple of different kinds of changes to the list. I think we're only focusing on how can a name be added to the list. And there's two types. One is when a new national society is formed, and that clearly is a rather long, complicated formal process that requires international sign-off within the international movement. But secondly, and my understanding is your concern may lie largely in terms of the variance. And so if you see what's on the screen here, pages 10 and 11 of the report, I'll say that staff did work through the entire spreadsheet that was sent to the working group by the Red Cross that contained only those names and the requested variants, and based on that came up with the list of the conditions, if you like, although that's probably not the right word, of what the permitted variants might be, both in English as well as the official UN languages. So this was in line with the instruction from the Council, which, based on the Copenhagen discussions, understood that there would be a need for a limited list of variants. And so it was up to this reconvened group to work on what that limited list might be. In working on that list, and based on the staff homework, which you actually received distilled here, the reconvened group quickly understood that was important, not just to say it is, you know, the Japanese Red Cross and these two other names, it is the Mexican Red Crystal Society and these one other name, but to actually explain fully what those variants consisted of, and that's what you see in pages 11 and 12 of the report. So it remains a limited universe. It has certain rules, and those are the rules that you see documented here. I'm not sure if that fully answered your question, but hopefully that explains where this list came from and why it is both permitted but also extremely limited. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. I just think that I'm going to be pedantic again. I just think that a finished list is a finished list. You cannot add to it, and that's it. Thank you.
So we have Barry and then Heather.
Thank you, Thomas. And I think just to add on to what Mary has said here, the finite list being discussed here for the terms of this report is to get to a point where it's implemented and that finite list doesn't change all up to implementation and its policy effective date. There are basically three recommendations here, 4 through 6, that are strictly about the in-flight process of getting these onto the reserve name list, error handling, when these original National Society names were added at the direction of the board back in 2014, it was uncovered that there were a few errors on that list. And the intent of the recommendations and the use of the finite list here is to get to that steady state point. Whereas the policy that I put a link into the chat, which what became effective on 1 August of 2018, which encompasses not only just Red Cross names, but International Olympic Committee, as well as IGO full names and a subset of INGOs, that policy for all of those groups does basically, in a generic term, have a maintenance provision or maintenance procedures, meaning one, that there's an exception procedure should one of these protected organizations wish to register that name and use it. But secondarily, and especially for cases, and mostly for cases for the Red Cross National Societies, as Stefan Hankins has told us, you know, there are one or two, you know, maybe three. As Thomas noted, I don't believe it's a large number, but there will be a future national society that is created and adopted via the Geneva Convention and their rule set. So it made more sense to create a procedure to manage that small dynamic change as opposed to trying to launch a whole new PDP to cover just for one new national society being formed. I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Heather, please.
Yes, thanks, Thomas, very much. I just wanted to follow up on a comment that I made in the chat, and indeed it links very neatly to what Barry has just said. So I think, you know, it's key here to me from a process point of view that if you believe that we're missing any relevant information, it's very important to point that out. I think we can all brace ourselves for the comment, justified or not, you know, it would have been very useful to have that pointed out when the group was deliberating. But I think, you know, we discussed that point. Thomas carried that point pretty neatly in the beginning of the call. We were missing a key piece of information when this thing went to the council, when it finalized work with Thomas as chair in its first incarnation in 2012-2013. That piece of information was, you maybe remember, the Red Cross essentially asked for anything and everything under the sun, no boundaries around anything. It was technically not feasible. It was legally full of holes. And we all walked away looking like bad guys for denying the Red Cross, you know, what they had asked for. We've held a very hard line within council in even reopening this PDP. We had to go through quite a few logistical or process, let's say, hurdles to even reopen a PDP that had been voted on. And one of those rationales, the primary rationale for reopening the PDP, was that we finally had an understanding of the the Red Cross finally understood the need for a precise list, that list had to be limited to, as Barry's just explained, the National Society names and not crazy variations and this sort of thing, that if this was going to work, it was going to have to be directly linked and tied to the National Society name. And we pushed back rather strenuously, myself and Greg Shatton, I think in particular, against any suggestion that might involve acronyms, partly because it's not in the instructions from council, but also the reason it's not in the instructions from council is that we're well aware of the legal concerns there, and we can characterize that as free speech or trademark or any number of other legal concerns. So I just wanted to put that procedural aspect on things, Thomas, and I apologize for taking us 1 minute over. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks very much, Heather. That's very helpful. So we've reached the top of the hour. I'd like to suggest that we do the following. If you could analyze, as you surely will do, the responses that we gave to today and whether those responses helped you in your assessment of our report and in your process to determine how you're going to deal with this at the council level, that would be great. And if there's anything that we can do to provide more information, I mean, it will not be possible for us to rewrite the report, but what we can do is offer more information to help in your decision making. And also, I think I would be perfectly okay with adding an additional note or dissenting statement or minority opinion from your group to the report if you want to highlight your opposition, if any, to your statement so far. So with that, I think we can adjourn unless there are any last-minute interventions. I think Heather's hand is an old hand. Tatiana, you said you asked whether we can add a minority statement. So if that is a way for you to help mitigate or help bridge the gap, that's certainly something that I would or that we would consider. I think I would need to check with procedures. Well, Mary, maybe we can publish it along with the report, not to include it in there, but to give some additional visibility to the opposition. Well, I suggest we take this offline, consider it, and maybe you can consider whether that's something that you would want to do, and we can continue discussing that on the list. So with that, thanks all of you for your time. I think this has been very interesting. I hope it has been helpful for you guys. So have a great day and bye for today.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.